AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products, with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM. As you know, we serve Philadelphia, southeastern Pennsylvania, the state of New Jersey, and northern Delaware 7 days a week. And you can always hear American Workers Radio here from 11 a.m. until 12 noon each and every Wednesday. Well, I want to tell you, this is going to be a very interesting day because entering the studio, giving a hug to Dr. Henry Chaplinsky is our very own Larkin Connolly. Larkin, you are a wild man and you are the very best. As you know, ladies and gentlemen, we sent out thousands of requests each Wednesday morning, and we ask that you send out your announcement sheet to your family members and friends, because this is how we continue to get a lot of people on board to help us to spread the word about the Buy American Made campaign and all the good things that we do to make America a better place for workers, for families, and for our economy. In fact, our 2019 theme is working together for the best interest of America and American workers. On board today, I'm very pleased to say, we have Mark Andel, the founder of the Made in America store, Larkin Connolly, sitting in studio, the national small business advocate, always a wild man, Rich Logis, the principal of RJL Technology Integration, our engineer is always number one, Henry Chaplinsky, and Curtis Ellis will be with us today. He is the executive director of the American Jobs Alliance, and also he heads the America First Project. Well, I want to say I'm Michael Blihash. Thank you for stopping me in my travels, and my thanks to all of you that are tuned in for our weekly edition of American Workers Radio. A broadcast like American Workers Radio has always been promoting creating job opportunities for all working age and able-bodied Americans. That's a great statement, working age and able-bodied Americans. And with this theme in mind, we always look back at the jobs we have in America, and we're urging our fellow Americans to support our nation, the country where we live, that where we want our families to thrive, not just to do, you know, lip service through some internet site or whatever. We are promoting. With that theme, we're promoting more job opportunities and looking to help ensure that America's young people, and I mean we have millions and millions of young people that will be going to school, are in school, will be graduating from school, and they have to be part of the new world economy. What do you say to that, Larkin? They want to be part of the brand new world economy. Your children, my children, our grandchildren. I mean, get with this. What the hell is going on? All I keep hearing on TV is everything, we're going to give the world away, and we're going to love and do this and that, but nothing normal where we're going to do something to make every person independent in themselves. Larkin, you're in studio. Let's hear from you first today.
Well, good morning, Michael. And Henry, it's always a pleasure to see you, especially when I stand out in the hallway and text you dirty messages when you don't even know I'm in the building. And good morning, everybody. Mark, I'm down here holding down the fort. Rich, your desk and, I mean, your chair and microphone are in good order. And I await your arrival up here as soon as you can figure that out, maybe on your way to Indianapolis in October. But it's great to be back, Michael. It took me exactly 1 hour and 5 minutes to get from the old score office down here, fully reminding me why I love Florida. And I've never seen so many people working on the streets, sewers, the infrastructure,
everything in the kitchen sink is being worked on.
Yep. Well, that's a good sign because we got people back to work and we are at full employment. I want to congratulate President Trump, on breaking news that just came out about 37 minutes ago, he has in fact exercised his executive privilege and will absolutely not allow anybody to see the Mueller report. That will aliven the debate, I'm sure, but it might, just might, spirit everybody to get back to work and stop this tomfoolery. It's just absolutely asinine.
But you know, Lorcan, from what I understand, I'm not an expert in this, but from what I understand is that every member of Congress, especially the leadership, was welcome to go down and read the full report.
Yes.
In the Capitol conference room. If they did not do that, why not? So they can keep the foolishness going. It didn't make any sense to me. If it was me, I would go down and I would have a copy of the report that has, you know, the stuff that was public, and then I would look for the stuff that's not been publicized. But they don't seem to want to do that.
Well, they want it released because they think it'll be an embarrassment to Donald Trump. It's quite the opposite. I think Trump is being president, very presidential at this point, by refusing to release the names of people who were indicted, but not found to be conspirators. And, you know, that it's just not fair to release it, period.
And it's not needed. I mean, it just opens another conversation up on something that we don't need. We've already heard so much about it for 2 years. We could have closed this case six months after it was opened.
They're going to take this one all the way to the election. There's no question the 2020 elections are going to have a lot of people accusing Donald Trump of things that he doesn't deserve to be.
Well, I think that every one of those that is complaining should go down to the conference room in the Capitol and be allowed to sit there for several hours and read it all and take it in their heart. They don't have to go and spread it. A smear campaign on any person that was interviewed or whatever is really not something that America needs or wants at this point in our history.
And I'm sure Curtis has a lot more to say about executive privilege and why President Trump did this. But it's over with. There was no conspiracy found. They keep on saying the Russians meddled in our election. They did. We know that. That's confirmed.
And probably they've done it for years and years. But because they're always looking to put not only Russians, but anybody wants to put in a top guy that they can have main contact with. So if they did that, I mean, this is the way business is done in America, whether it's in corporate America or elective America. This is how it's done, that people run to the front to try to get in and in.
And I just hope Curtis has taken every opportunity to speak to Lindsey Graham and to make sure that Lindsey exercises his will as the chairman of the Intelligence Committee and really does start to investigate the Clintons. You know, if you want to drag Donald Trump through the dirt for the next 4 years, you might as well drag the Clintons with him, because they are just as guilty. And I've read enough of this material to understand where the dossiers came from and what the Clintons did and the role they played in playing around with the election. Both sides, to that degree, of dossiers and that type of thing, probably were complicit. But Donald Trump did not break any laws. He was not in contact with the Russians. He didn't conspire with them to win the election. Enough said.
Enough said.
How can you have obstruction when you don't have a broken law? You know, it's got to get to the Supreme Court quickly, and the Supreme Court's got a role on it. And I will honestly, I know the Supreme Court is Republican or more conservative than it is liberal. But I will stand by whatever the Supreme Court rules.
If that's the case, Larkin.
Let's get on with
business. I hope it gets to the Supreme Court and let's move forward. Dr. Rich Loges, how are you doing?
Good morning, Michael. And Larkin, thanks for keeping that seat warm. I'll tell you, I'm going to be up there eventually. Maybe I'll take my four-month-old with me. Get her on air, Michael.
Absolutely.
And, well, I'll tell you what.
Get her on air. And I've already had Isabella on. Our listeners may recall I asked her on air a couple months ago if she wants us to build a wall, and she enthusiastically said yes.
Absolutely.
And, I do recall.
You know,
that.
Mike, I just wrote an article this week. It's published. It'll be on my site, and I'll send that out on my newsletter this week, Michael. And the title of the article is "The Democratic Party, America's Original Hate Group." The House Judiciary Committee, unless this information I'm looking at is incorrect, just voted to hold our Attorney General William Barr in contempt. Now, my question is, what was he held in, Larkin?
What did who
was
who
he
voted?
Held in contempt over?
Who voted? I'm sorry, I missed that, Rich.
That the House Judiciary Committee just voted affirmatively to hold our Attorney General William Barr in contempt. My question is, in contempt of what?
Yeah, right. In contempt of the Congress because he won't appear to answer the.
You know
same?
What is the charge by which to contempt? There is in history, Michael. In Stalin's Soviet Union, the head of the police state was named Lavrenty Beria, and he had a quote that he would often say it was the basis for the police state of the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, USSR. And that quote was, "Show me a man, and I'll show you his crime." Not, "Show me a man, we'll go through 5th and 14th Amendment due process, equal protection, innocent until proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt by an impartial jury of your peers." It was, "Show me a man, I'll show you his crime." Oh, Connolly, tax cheat. Oh, you know, Blehosh, money launderer. Kuplinski, Sanders voter. No, I'm just kidding. He didn't actually vote for Sanders. Maybe I shouldn't say that because I shouldn't talk about how people voted publicly. But Henry knows, our great audio engineer, he knows we need his vote for 2020. He's a swing voter in a swing state. Henry, we need your vote for 2020. So I shouldn't say how we vote. Henry might be mad at me, but he was, let's just say that he was on our team for 2020. And our audio engineer, again, not to speak for him, would also say that, and this is a sentiment echoed by many others after 2016, Larkin, that a little bit more faith in the democratic process was restored. So on one hand, it does disgust me that, again, whatever my opinion of President Obama, I never actually rooted for him to fail. I never wished that he'd be a traitor. So on one hand, it certainly does disgust me because the people who are most hurt by all this are those working people, you know, who were front and center in 2016. So it does disgust me. But on the flip side of it, Michael, you know, again, to quote Napoleon, never interrupt your enemy when he's making a mistake. I would rather that we work than have the opposition make mistake. I don't ideally really want that, but at the same time, the Democrats are going to do whatever they're going to do, and I just believe that it's all being done. It's all being done because there is a certain psychosis in the party right now of rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic and thinking that it will keep the ship afloat. So, you know, that's kind of where I am on this. But, you know, going into next year, we just had a jobs report that came out. You know, Curtis can talk better about this. And 3 years ago, our Federal Reserve said that in 2019, 2020, America's economy was going to be in really bad shape. And instead, we had a really solid jobs report. Right now, inflation is pretty low. So we shouldn't exactly, Michael, look at all experts and look at what they say as gospel. I mean, after all, Hillary Clinton was supposed to win 57 states. So,
you know, and one thing you're forgetting, Rich, is an unreal number on consumer confidence, excuse me. That's hit an all-time high. The last time they registered consumer confidence, I think it was a 125, and they said it can't get any higher. That's just an absolutely unreal number. And we woke up couple days ago, and it was 129. So, you know, I wish I understood the consumer index a little bit better, and hopefully Curtis does. But Trump keeps on, he keeps on dealing cards, and you can't believe the hand he's stealing it. You really can't.
Yes, and I have to say, just want to add this before I go to Curtis and to Mark, that I think that a lot of the people who are listeners of our radio program, supporters of American Workers and Buy American Made campaign, are also very responsible for the good economy. People have seen for themselves that what happened in America, the loss of jobs, the loss of industries, they weren't saying too much for the last 25, 30 years, as a lot of those agreements and all were agreed to by our wise 535 national elected leaders. But now that they see that there is someone speaking up, cheering for them in Washington, no matter if you love or hate President Trump, the fact of the matter is a lot of these things needed to be said. They should have been said. There was no reason whatsoever that President Clinton, President Bush, and President Obama, in fact, I thought that President Obama would be doing what Donald Trump is doing right now, and that is shaking up all of the people to see what we can do if we just work together. That didn't happen. So it took President Trump, who, I mean, has done unbelievable things, but I also want to give credit to our listeners, our supporters, the radio broadcasters that air my weekly commentary, and the people that go out of their way to speak up in support of American Made where they shop. Dr. Curtis Ellis, tell us everything.
It is great to be here with you. What a wonderful day. You gave me the perfect setup there, the perfect lead-in, because what I want to talk about is the announcement by President Trump that he is ready to impose or to hike the tariffs on Chinese imports from 10% to 25%. Talk about made in America versus made in China. You said that finally people believe and understand that there's someone looking out for them. The American people, finally in Washington, have someone looking out for them. Let's look at history here for a moment of our trade relations with China. I wrote a piece recently, and I'm working on another one, highlighting this very aspect, of the fact that during the debate 20 years ago, October 2000, the twilight of the Clinton administration, the final days of that session of Congress, the Senate was debating whether to extend permanent normal trade relations with China, to give China the same preferential trade treatment we give an industrial democracy, that we give our best allies, France, Britain, Germany, people who respect the rule of law, countries where private property and free enterprise is the norm and enforced by centuries-old institutions of clean courts and non-corrupt officials. We would give that same privilege to communist China, a communist regime which at the time and to this day is well known and distinguished by its persecution of people who want nothing more than to worship the god of their choice. A regime that forces women to have abortions, literally rips babies from the womb up to the final days of pregnancy. A regime that confiscates property, has no, in its legal system, has no concept of private property. A regime that, I can go through the whole, I could go through a long list, and I won't go through the entire list, but a regime that imprisons and persecutes and executes independent labor leaders, people who want to form a union to ask for higher wages or better working conditions. Try that in China, you get a bullet in the back of the head, and your family gets a bill for the bullet.
That's true. But it is true. Life is very, very poorly valued in China.
That's right. So there were a few senators that voted against this, 14 of them, actually. Joe Biden was not one of them. He led the charge to give this regime, this horror show, preferential trade treatment, make it a most favored nation. Well, one of the senators that was against this was Jesse Helms. And Jesse Helms, a great conservative from North Carolina, the late, great Jesse Helms, said, there can be no question that this legislation, this move, will be good for certain corporate interests. But is it good for the national interest? We must do what's good for the nation, not what's good for certain business interests. And that really encapsulates it. What we have done with China, and time after time, and as you were saying, Michael, the policymakers in Washington, the swamp creatures, the establishment in Washington, has done what's good for certain business interests, but not what's in the national interest. And now President Trump is saying, enough. China has cheated. They're not living up to their agreements. Without going into the specifics of why today, look, I will go into the specifics. We gave them more than 90 days, 120 days, to negotiate in good faith, to correct some of their egregious violations of the commitments they made 20 years ago when they joined the World Trade Organization. And that's what we've been negotiating since December 1st. They've now reneged on even the progress they made. And Trump said, okay, the tariffs that were supposed to go to 25% on January 1st, and we postponed it on March 1st, and then we postponed it, enough already. We're going to bring those tariffs up to 25% on Friday, 12:01 a.m., Friday morning. It's going to go up to 25% because you guys are jerking us around. And he's not just jerking around. They're not just jerking around President Trump and our trade negotiators. They're jerking around the American people.
That's right.
The American people have been held in contempt by the Chinese communist regime, who have deliberately stolen our jobs, stolen our factories. Our corporate leaders in this country have acted as a fifth column supporting the Chinese communists. Our corporate leaders took the factories out of Pennsylvania and moved them to China. Wall Street has acted as the investor relations department for the Chinese communist regime, counseling the companies that it lends money to and that it does mergers and acquisitions to and that it sets up bond issues for, counseling them to move to China to take advantage of the cheap labor and the subsidized energy and the free land and the free factories that the communists give them over there. And President Trump has stood up to all of them, as well as standing up to the communist regime in Beijing to say, enough already. We're going to do, I, President Donald J. Trump, am going to do what's in the American national interest, what's in the best interest of our nation, rather than what's in the best interest of a small cabal of global corporations that don't care at all about the American people and the American nation. That's what's behind this whole push for globalism and the global economy, is giant global corporations that want to operate freely anywhere without the constraints of having to worry about what's good for America or what's good for France or what's good for anywhere else. They just want to worry about what's good for their shareholders, and the shareholders happen to be themselves, you know, a few corporate officers who get paid with stock options, right? They own huge blocks of this stock. So when they say, well, we're just doing what's good for the shareholders, but when you hear a CEO says, well, my obligation is to do what's good for the shareholders, he's talking about doing what's good for himself, right? Because he's the major shareholder.
Curtis, I like that idea, and I want to say this to you. I wish there was a way for us to identify the way the shareholders who are making profits from the imported items and the shareholders that are making profits from the American-made items. I say that because every one of the agreements that was made 25 and 30 years ago, it really helped cause all the negative employment that America has been experiencing for decades. However,
That's right. However,
now that changes are taking place, the national leaders that approved those very trade agreements are angry because bigger and better plans and agreements are now on the table that may be taking the sugar train away from them. And they're not
exactly
happy
right.
with it.
That's
not,
right.
And, you know, I want to also add here, and Mark, is another thing. I don't understand how a national elected leader found it okay to receive a weekly paycheck for what they did and for their staff members as well, to be compensated with no problem, but they never felt it was okay to see employment in America flourish. They never thought it was okay that, hey, we have to keep our jobs here. They never, you know, blinked an eye when they had to direct our American people to welfare-related programs because they themselves were receiving their check. They didn't live in the real world. And so this is a big problem that these investors don't like it because their sugar train is now beginning to end. Because a dollar, a product made for a dollar in America could be sold for $30 in America in the past. Today, that dollar product is now $2 and they want to sell it for $35 in America. But if it's American made, we're going to pay a fair wage to the people. So that product that you paid $35 for may cost to manufacture $15 or $16.
And the biggest insult in what you just said is that when Walmart imports Chinese material over here, Chinese goods over here, they charge,
as if it was made in America.
As if it were made in America.
Right.
And that's the problem.
So they're gorging themselves at the banquet table of profits while the American people for 30 years were pushed to the pavement, in fact, pushed to walk in the street instead of in the pavement. We built China and other countries. Their places are beautiful. Their people are employed. Everybody is sending their children around the world to be educated in America's schools. But nobody in Washington took under consideration, how are our people going to have a job? How are our people going to pay their expenses? And most important to them, how are our people going to pay their taxes so that we don't have the type of growing debt that we have? This is the bottom line. American workers, everywhere I go, American workers and young people tell me, geez, I'm in debt. I'm in debt. I'm graduating. I graduated 3 years ago. I'm in this enormous debt. And yet I have no job for what I paid all that money to be educated for. I have no job. So now I have to do something. I'm doing waitering. I'm doing this and that. I'm doing Ubering to make money to pay off my $90,000 education loan. This is where the idioticness of all this is. And yet nobody's talking about it. All these presidential candidates are blah, 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 what they want to give, what they want to, you know, take from this one and that one. But they're not talking about the real issues, the real bread and butter issues that affect America's families. It doesn't make sense, but we have to remember, this is going to be a long vetting process. And we have 20 plus candidates running for president, and only one will come out in the end to be the person to run on the Democratic side, and there will only be one on the Republican side. And God knows, we may even have an independent run.
And my pragmatic side says, my pragmatic side says, listen, let's resolve this issue with Trump and get on with our business of making the country a better place to live. My political side says, come on, Democrats, keep it up. Please go into the 2020 election with the Mueller report as the main topic. They'll get eaten alive.
Yeah,
they'll
eaten alive. You know, you're right, Larkin. And Mark can tell us, how can anyone in Washington, elected and being paid, sit back and watch, have watched for years, the loss of industries, our properties, all of the new inventions that were made in America turned over to foreign countries because that's where they were going to be imagined, while our people were out of work. And people tell me, oh, you're such a radical or whatever. No, I'm not a radical. I'm looking out for my kids and for my grandkids. And I hope that every listener is looking out for their children and grandchildren, because that's what we're all about. Mark, we want to hear some words of wisdom from you. How are you doing?
Excellent, excellent. I want a selfie with Larkin in studio. You can hide the beer if you want. But great, great show. A lot of things going on. I woke up with the thought, let's make America America again. That's what we're doing. But with China, Curtis, nice talking to you this week, too. Hope everything was helpful. But China, again, that tariffs, and it was all driven by Walmart and Curtis. You probably agree if you check back to the late 90s. That's when Walmart drove these tariffs down so they could operate their big business with 8,000-plus stores back then. They got plenty more now. It's all about that. And if you want to grow this country, you put that tariff on. And I think that's when the real change starts. If it's 12 o'clock Friday, Curtis, that's when the change starts. If that goes from 10% to 25%, then this country gets going. We start building the supply chains and everything starts rock and rolling for Made in America. But a lot going on up here. Mike, we've got our big event coming up May 18th. We do at our Made in America store. And we've got yesterday I talked to Margarita Mendoza from the Made in America movement. She's the founder of the Made in America movement. Started about when I did, and you may have heard of her, guys. But she joined us. She wanted to join us. She trusted us 9 years. She said, I'm only wanting to push you and your store and continue to grow this movement together. So, Mike, it's somebody we'll have on the show. She's got a great team. And she really just helps suppliers that are Made in America products and really supports them and has some membership and really helps them digitally market their product Made in America. So big win yesterday, and she's got 250,000 followers. And we joined teams and, just on basically handshake. But major things are happening. Rich, thanks for all the work, even with the Made in America event. Don Buckner, I think, reached out to most everyone. Jason Blount just reached out to Clyde Strickland yesterday and put the American-made movie first on the agenda. And you might have seen that email, but major nice write-up on the American-made documentary movie. So everything's coming together now. It's going to be a huge fall event. Great, great stuff. What I really want to talk about is the skilled worker shortage. This we've been talking about, Mike, since I joined your show. And meeting with the MOGs, and like I said, I'm on a workforce development boards. I'm on six of them and different ones. But I met with my top, top customer. I won't say who, but there's such a shortage now of skilled trade workers and workers. Everybody's stealing each other's workers by offering extended, unbelievable vacation plans. And you can come in an hour late. But the shortage is here, and it's huge. You can't grow the economy, unfortunately, without workers now. So this skilled work shortage is front page, number one priority, and should be throughout this debate on presidency.
You're absolutely right, Mark. Everywhere I go, people are saying,
it's big.
I want to grow my business, but the problem is there are not enough people out there.
Mike, but they're stealing each other's engineers, and you should see how big. I was in a major meeting with a major oil company. It's incredible, the shortage.
You know, Mark, I want to get your friend on the show to talk about her part of the movement, too. That's very important.
I really like Margarita. She put 9 years, Mike, true, same fabric as us. Didn't trust many, doesn't like to collaborate a lot, waits 3-4 years, make sure they're real, and just loves America.
You know,
great tie.
We're addressing something very important. 2 weeks ago, I attended a meeting on poverty and how we can work together to eliminate poverty. And I sat there at the meeting in amazement. And naturally, when it came time for people to speak, I did speak. And I said, well, I don't understand why we're continuing to talk about the poverty dilemma. The national leaders who've been in Washington for 30 years really caused the poverty dilemma we have in the United States by allowing all of those jobs to leave the country. And then I said, which of course didn't go over too well, I said the new crop of presidential candidates are talking about nothing but the giveaway mentality that helps place America in more debt. So,
Michael,
Curtis, you don't want to know the look that I received. These people looked at me like I have 75 heads, which I do probably. And they thought, like, what the hell is this guy? And, poverty, by the way, I have to tell you, working in human services, I can tell you firsthand, I know that 95% of the people that I have worked with and continue to work with are people who either immigrated to this country over the years, people who are born in America, and they don't look at poverty as something to aspire to. They're disappointed when they hear that people are just sitting there in poverty and doing nothing to help get themselves out of poverty. And that's when Larkin mentioned about the full employment situation and all. We have got to get the people from poverty to training programs so we can fill the skills gap here in the USA.
Yeah, we got to do it quick.
We have to do it quick. It has to be done. This has to be one of the items on the top of all discussions during the upcoming presidential election. It started early, and why shouldn't that subject start early to really get it on the table? We need the skilled programs, the trade programs, and the technology programs all reinstated in our schools. No excuses.
Can I make a comment, please? And it's based on Larkin and all you guys, actually. A couple of weeks ago, after Joe Biden probably sniffed a couple of heads, he went in front of a crowd and he said how America's he was talking about China, Curtis. Do you remember this? And he said, oh, China, what is everyone worried about? America's economy is the most robust and vibrant in the world. And I went on my social media and I said, look, even Biden's on board with the Trump economy. Look at that. I said, look, a broken clock is in fact correct twice a day. And it's Michael. And again, some may agree with this comment, some may not. It's my opinion. I speak only for myself. But I do not believe that in the history of this republic, I don't believe that the two sides, and again, let's be honest, there's always just ever been two sides because that's the way mankind is. Mankind is two sides. We're a binary species. In the history of the republic, never has the divide been as wide and as starkly contrasting as right now. Not even the Civil War was as wide a gap, in my opinion. And so if that's true, if what I'm saying is in fact true, then there's only really two ways of looking at not only the government, but our economy, whatever it may be. When you listen to the Democrats, especially the 2020 nominees, they talk about government as a god. They talk about government as an authoritarian entity that people should fear the government. Oh, you're in poverty? You need to fear me so I feed you. Then the other side, our side, talks about it differently. We talk about, no, government should fear us. Economic freedom, constitutional liberties, etc. There's as big a divide, Michael, as it gets. You can't get any wider than the gap right now. So everybody's got to pick a side. You're either going to be on the side where the government fears us, freedom, or the other side, which is we fear the government, tyranny. There is no other choice. That's your choice. Those are your choices. So everyone's got to make a decision. And if you stay home, those who stay home side with the side where we fear the government.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Curtis, you've heard it all. What do you have to add to this?
Well, it's hard to add anything to that. I just want to reiterate again, we have seen time and again the politicians in Washington doing the bidding of these global corporations that don't care about Americans, willing to sell Americans into poverty, put Americans into poverty. Joe Biden is a prime example. He is a prime example of the Washington, the bipartisan Washington establishment. His son benefited greatly from closer ties with China. His son received $1 billion from the Chinese government-owned Bank of China. They gave him $1 billion, put it into an investment fund, so that Hunter Biden, who had no previous experience in finance or private equity, could start making investments and buying companies. And he went into a partnership with a Chinese military contractor to buy an American precision machining company that made military-grade components. This is just outrageous. These people in Washington have worked directly counter to the best interests of Americans and the best interests of the American national interest. I'm reading a story right now that people forget that in 1996, the Chinese gave hundred thousands of dollars to the Clinton campaign and to the Democratic National Committee to help reelect Bill Clinton, to help elect Democrats to Congress. And at the same time, the Clinton administration was allowing Chinese satellites to be launched on American rockets. A big Democratic donor was selling guidance technology, missile guidance technology, to China. It goes on and on. It's just outrageous. And they claim all along, these people, that they're not doing anything against America's national interest, that all this money these politicians take from foreign sources, from Chinese sources, is not influencing their policy decisions to to open up trade with China and have closer economic ties with China. It's really, really disgusting to see what's going on. And finally, we have a president who's not cut from that cloth. We have a president who is standing up for what's best for America. And yeah, once we look, when imports from China have a 25% tariff on them, it will suddenly become economically viable to have jobs in America. It will make sense to invest and make things in America. It's not not rocket science here, folks. If we're forced to compete against cheap labor, no taxes, no environmental laws, no labor standards, no nothing, we can't. It's always been that way. Nothing has changed. There's not a new global economy of some hocus-pocus at work here. It is real simple.
You know, you're right, Curtis, and I want to mention something which is very interesting. Being out at a hardware store, don't want to mention the name, I was looking for a particular product which I thought was still made in America. As I looked at the packaging, I thought to myself, wow, is that made now in China? I can't get over it. The package looked exactly as it did 2-3 years ago when I purchased it American made. The problem is this: as I was talking to a man, an ex-Marine, he was saying to me, well, China does own a lot of the companies. They own a lot of the brand names. They
right.
just purchased it out. So I thought to myself, and I said to him, and I've said this before some couple years ago, I said, well, now it's time for us to make some new brand names come on the market. We could have a Larkin, a plumber's kit, or a Larkin hammer? What do we need a particular hammer with a long 50-year tradition of a name that's now made in China? Let's have a brand new one. I mean, we have to encourage our people to do that. I'm disgusted, quite frankly, with all of the political people running for president, talking about all this stuff they want to continue to give, how they're worried about China and everything else. Are they worried about America? Are they worried about our children's future, our people who are going to schools and going to be graduating? Nothing. I hear nothing about this from these candidates. They really, really are disgusting. If they put, you know, 5% in, they could say, well, I had, you know, part of my platform is. But all they keep saying is they're worried about this. They're worried about that. And everywhere I go, Curtis and Mark and Larkin and Rich, I want to tell you, people say we need the wall up, even if it's a public relations thing. We have to show our authority. We have to show that you enter America. I'm from a family, we're all from families here, that came to this country legally. They were either welcome during the Industrial Revolution or they came here legally. Just coming to your house and you open the door and people run in the door, start running for your refrigerator, use all your facilities, watch your television, that's not the way we do it. We have to invite people to our home. In this case, we have to invite people to our country. I like the fact that there will be tariffs on these products. Mark, would a tariff hurt any of your products?
No, not at all. 9,000 products, 500 privately owned American businesses. No, our prices won't be affected.
All right.
I want to thank, by the way, I just want to thank Mark for all your help. Linda McMahon is writing a piece for Fox Business website, and it features her visit to the Made in America store, and get what Mark just said, 9,000 products, over 500 American manufacturers get a shout-out in the piece.
Excellent. Thank you.
And hopefully it'll be going live here any day now, and maybe any minute now, and I will be sure to send it around to everybody.
Once we got through the cybersecurity, Curtis, we got everything to you.
Beautiful.
Yeah. It had to go through Beijing to get to me. Anything you send to me, by the way, by email, it's routed through Beijing.
She's great.
While we're giving shout-outs, if I can, and I wouldn't interrupt and change the subject like this if it wasn't pretty important, but as everybody who knows me well enough knows, my son left a restaurant chain in New York, in Brooklyn, and was recruited away to help two guys, Lee Hansen and Rich Nasser, Riyad Nasser, to open a store in the Tribeca section of Manhattan called Frenchette. I am pleased to announce that being open just short of a year, the night before last, Frenchette was named the best new restaurant in the United States of America.
Wow. Very nice.
Wow. And my son is the front-end manager and the back-end manager. He's the general manager of the operation, and he works directly for Lee Hansen. And I am so sinfully proud. It's insane. But he has put an indelible stamp on his own resume.
Beautiful.
He opened it.
In America, anything can be done. Yep. If you put your focus, you're focused and consistent on something. Everything and anything is possible. That's why I urge all the parents and grandparents in the audience to make sure you start talking. We're not talking enough to the kids, the young people, about what do you really want to do. That used to be a policy in the schools. What do you want to be when you grow up? You remember that, Larkin, very well.
My son knew he wanted to be associated with food. He knew it in one way or another. And he slipped onto the management side, and this is enormous. It's unheard of for a startup restaurant like this.
Beautiful. Now look at the pride you have.
Yeah.
You know,
unbelievable.
Go back 20, 25 years ago when a young person graduated college, they were so pleased to say, my son got a job here or there. You know, today that wasn't happening in the last few years.
Not the way it was.
Because those jobs, the technology, the research and development and all, was sent over to foreign countries. In fact, I don't understand. People are complaining to me all the time. They get blood work done, and then they have to wait for the results to come from India.
Yeah.
I don't understand what the hell is going on. Yeah. Don't we have people in America that could read those results? This has got to come to some kind of an end. Maybe we should put a 25% tariff on reading those results, yeah. Curtis.
So, and Curtis, by the way, you have carte blanche. I've given my son your name. You may walk in at any time. It will be an impossible seat to get in New York, obviously.
Now, where is that again? Give me the name and address of that restaurant, please.
it's called Frenchette. And it's in the Tribeca section of Lower Manhattan.
Frenchette?
Frenchette. Frenchette. Frenchette.
I love it. Oh, I'll be there.
Yeah. So, and I've given them your name. I also want to shout out for Patrice Banks, who has been a guest on this show. She finds out today, and all indications are positive, if her new television show, produced by Elizabeth Banks, and Danny DeVito, gets picked up for this coming fall season.
Really? Excellent.
Yeah, and it's called Patty's Garage. Curtis, for your edification, Patrice was an engineer for DuPont and left that job, went back to school to learn how to be an automobile technician, and opened up a girls' auto clinic, and has won every award known to man. It's amazing, and Hollywood finally came knocking and said, "We'd like to make a comedy relief kind of program out of Patty's Garage," and her name's Patrice, but they changed it to Patty's Garage, and instead of being based in Philadelphia, where there would be unknowing liabilities, it's going to be based in Baltimore. But it's a Philadelphia shop, and she's my mentee, and she's been on this program. She knows and loves Michael and Henry, and has talked to Rich and. Both which in
very see anything is possible.
Anything's possible.
Anything is possible. I look forward to seeing that.
I'm betting it'll be on the television in September.
Now, see, Larkin, you can be especially proud of that because you mentored her. You took her along. I know how many times you came to Philadelphia to go and visit Patrice and all in her new ventures.
Yep.
God bless her. We'll be looking forward to hearing the good announcement of that, and we'll get everybody to tune in. Patrice, if you're listening, we wish you the best. Always the best.
You Yay.
Know, I wanted to just add one question to the mix today. I want everybody to ask themselves, how many national leaders that they know actually ever created a job other than for their staff people, which we pay for? You know, there was a survey being done of the people in Congress who either are lawyers or accountants or some other kind of, you know, hierarchy that wanted to go to Congress to share their goodness with. But how many of those people created jobs? How many of those people understand what the real bottom line is, Curtis? Do you know? I mean, you worked in Congress. How many of those people could you say, this one was good because they helped create jobs, they ran businesses? How many do you know?
Very few. I worked for one of them. I worked for a congressman out of Green Bay, was actually Appleton, Wisconsin, and he was a doctor. He was an allergist. So he had a few people on his payroll. He actually ran a business. He had a chain of allergy clinics in northeast Wisconsin that he built from nothing. So he actually knew how the world works and how business works. But most of these guys are lawyers. Most of these guys, maybe they had a law practice or an insurance practice. You have Mike Kelly, a great guy from Erie, Pennsylvania, that western Pennsylvania area. He was a Cadillac dealer. He had a car dealership. He didn't sell used cars. He sold new cars, so that's good. He didn't sell lemons. And
So he had a little bit of, and he comes from a family business, so he had he has some experience in how the world works and meeting a payroll and signing paychecks, not just cashing them, government checks, that is, not just cashing government checks. But it's even almost worse than that. Well, it is worse than that if you can imagine it. That's what I mean. Even if you can imagine something worse than not ever having been in business. Most of these guys, or a lot of these guys and gals, come right out of school and then go into politics. And the staff of the Congress, so you've got these Congress people who've never been in business. They're all academics or they're, you know, lawyers at best. And their staff, the people that tell them how to vote and what legislation needs to be written, they're all kids that came right out of school. They came right out of the Kennedy School of Government or, you know, Political Science Department of Ohio State University or something. They've never worked in the real world. They've They've not even worked in the real world.
Right.
Let alone, forget about owning a business, running a business. They never even worked for a real business. And they come right out of college, and then they're going to write the rules for how the real world is supposed to work, right, having never experienced the real world. And then Paul Ryan is a prime example. He came out of college, went to work on as staff on Capitol Hill, never worked in the real world, and then he ran for office and became a congressman, and then he became Speaker of the House. So he's lived in this bubble, in this hermetically sealed bubble, his entire life, and he's a policy wonk, and he's supposed to be this great genius on everything. Unfortunately, he may be a great genius on some things, but he has absolutely no experience in how the world works, first-hand experience gained from actually living and working in it.
You know, if you took Nancy Pelosi and dropped her in the middle of a retail store in any retail store, she wouldn't know whether to sit down or blow her nose. She wouldn't have any idea what a cash register was even used for. I mean, this...
Yeah.
Seriously.
That's right.
That's the biggest disconnect. What you just said is point on the problem with the elected officials. They don't have a clue. Larkin, you know, laying in bed, worried about payrolls, everything.
Oh, that's a killer. That's a killer.
That's a life changer.
Ladies and gentlemen, I first of all want to say thank you to Larkin Conley, Rich Logis, Mark Andel, Curtis Ellis, our engineer Henry Chaplinsky, for a very interesting broadcast today. Let's continue this. Remember, Election Day is coming up in Philadelphia, and I'll be talking a little bit about that next week during the broadcast. I want to say a special thank you to the people that I met this past Saturday at the Pierogi Festival in Port Richmond. It was a wonderful event. We had about 7,000 people. It was wonderful. Thanks to everybody that participated. Thanks to our listeners for letting me know that they tune in. Your help is really important. Please go out and look for American-made products. Until this Saturday at 11 or next Wednesday at 11, my thanks to you. God bless America. God bless all of you and your families.
Have a great week, guys.
Thanks for the upbeat music, Henry.